Coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
Welcome to the Hagman Report for today. It is Tuesday, May 17th, 2022. I've got just a tremendous show lined up for you. This is going to be one for the books. I got to tell you, this is a dark picture being created here. I'm going to get right into it as I just cover a few things. I want to at least cover this first. In April of this year, the southern border, 234,088 illegals at the southern border, 117,989 were released. That's essentially catch and release. You had 113,248 removed. And there's really no clear definition on what that removed means, except 96,908 were refused by Title 42, which is due to be done away with. And that's just going to exacerbate matters because we had 2.9 million apprehensions, in other words, catch and release, since Joey Six Plugs took the seat in the Oval Office, was selected and installed in the Oval Office. And again, 2.9 million. That's, you're looking at pretty much the metropolitan Chicago area filled to capacity with illegals. Now, also some other statistics, which I think are really important as well, in the wake of and in the shadow of that shooting in Buffalo. And again, you know, it's interesting how we look at these, or how the left and the media looks at all of this. In 2020, which the latest FBI statistics, there were 21,570 murders in the United States. That's 2020, and that's 21,570 murders in the U.S. And out of that, the federal government classified 22 of those as hate crimes. All right. Now, I don't know what the rest are. Love crimes? I don't know. But that's about 1/100 of a percent it comes out to. And then when you break it down to Bud Democrat, love is in the air. Now that song's going to be in my head for the rest of the day. But when you break it down too by demographics, you'll see the majority are, well, not what you think. And I'll just leave it at that. But this is not, that's just kind of some stats, I guess. Of course, Pennsylvania primaries today, voted, did my thing. I took my own pen in there. I'm telling you right now, okay, I'm not using those sheets with Sharpies. It bleeds through. Now, I don't know. I took my own pen in there. I wasn't stopped. Of course, no one sees you. You know, anyway, bottom line here, look, I don't think we're going to vote our way out of what's coming. I don't think we're going to litigate our way out of what's coming. We have to fight our way out of what's coming. All right. So with that, here is the darkness that is descending upon us. You know, people make light of the Ministry of Truth, the governance, the Disinformation Governance Board. And I don't think that's something to make light of at all, any more than the bots on Twitter or the social networking, all of that that's going on right now, as well as the coming lockdowns. There will be more lockdowns. I promise you there will be more lockdowns. And it's going to be much harder. As a matter of fact, you can call these retribution lockdowns. But again, that's just something that I'm seeing coming up. Okay. Now, I want to get into something a little bit deeper here that revolves around this Ministry of Truth, this Nina Jankowicz, this Disinformation Governance Board. Now, this goes back as a commenter or two. One commenter on Rumble, I think it was, might have been Brighty on as well, mentioned the Smith-Mundt Act. Okay, I get all of that. But when we're talking about this, the influence of these people in this board, let's take a deeper dive into this, shall we? We have to. It's interesting because I received something from a friend in the state of Missouri, a physician, doctor, and he sent me some things, and it kind of started me on this quest. And the deeper I went into this rabbit hole, the worse things got, and the worse things are looking for us. Revolver did a great piece, and let's put that piece up. This is page number one. This was published yesterday. Now, the headline here for radio listeners and for the viewers, we're going to leave this up as I go through this, except when we cut to a couple of important video clips. But this is extremely important. The title is Busted. Biden's Minister of Truth, Nina Jankowicz, participated in secret NATO-funded cabal to subvert Western democracies using disinformation as cover. Now, that's a heck of a headline. Let's dissect that a little bit. So you've got Jankowicz, who was hand-selected to this DHS position. What's her background aside from being Scary Poppins? What's her background? Well, hold on a second here. Now we find that she has been involved in disinformation campaigns in NGOs, NATO-funded NGOs, shall we say. And think of what's happening with NATO right now. European countries, Finland, Sweden, wanting to be part of NATO, of course, and then having then Russia's response is to poise or position nuclear-tipped missiles at the border. You think they're going to take us into war? Yes, and all of this is connected. All right, the Revolver story. Moaning Myrtle Jankowicz. Yeah, the Harry Potter superfan turned propaganda drix is now the Biden administration's chosen head for the Disinformation Governance Board. And by the way, folks, this will affect all of us, and it has been affecting all of us, and it will continue, in fact, in spades. There's a video that we can cut to that sets the stage for Jankowicz, because we have to believe her, right? And we have to believe all of the bots, 20-some percent. We believe, perhaps, maybe. You're not talking to a real person on social networking, on Twitter? No. No. You watch. It's going to, that number of bots, AI bots, upwards of 20%. You watch. It's going to happen. But anyway, and the bots will cause you to think differently, okay? Now, again, this is going to get really dark and deep. So here is Scary Poppins. Again, that headline is from the New York Post. But here's Scary Poppins saying that there is no deep state. Let's go to video number one. Very short. Here it is.
Talking about the deep state and things like that, which is a thread among conspiracy communities here in the United States, that there is this secret cabal here in Washington working to undermine the American people. It couldn't be farther from the truth as someone who works with and around public servants every day.
Okay. So rest assured now, folks, there's no deep state. It's just a conspiracy community nonsense crap. There's no deep state. Don't worry about it. It's okay. Well, okay. Thank you, Nina. That was published on May 2nd. All right. Do you like her up talk? Boy, I'll tell you what. That just fries my brains when I hear that. Okay. Now, she wants everyone. This is going back to the Revolver article, if you don't mind putting that back up. She wants everyone to dismiss the very concept that secret groups are, in fact, operating within Washington, outside of Washington, worldwide, globally, whatever. She wants, or she works with and around them all, and can assure us that there's no such cabal of networks. She promises, in fact, she knows the truth, and it's the opposite of what she claims above. in that video right there. It's the opposite of that. Nia's name appeared in one of the most explosive and aggressively censored national security leaks of the century. Do you know what I'm talking about? If you don't know what I'm talking about, make sure you go to this Revolver article, read it, bookmark it, print it out, share it, because this is a key that opens up other dark secrets. This is a well-done article by Revolver. There is a collaborative known as Integrity Initiative. It was a dark government-funded NGO. What do? They engage in political meddling in covert influence operations in Western countries under the guise of fighting disinformation. Let me translate that for you. They plant disinformation. They stoke disinformation. They peddle it, title it as information to counter the disinformation. And you heard Nina right there saying, hey, there's no deep state. There's no secret cabal or no. Well, this is what she did with an NGO titled Integrity Initiative, now defunct. But Integrity Initiative, as Revolver states, and I found this to be true as I dug down deep into this, was founded in mid-2015 under the auspices of the UK government-funded NGO Institute for Statecraft. Now, this is where it gets really shaky, folks. Institute for Statecraft. The Integrity Initiative boasted a fashionable motto. And haven't we heard this everywhere? Defending democracy against disinformation. Remember when Barack Hussein Barry Sotaro came out with the phrase fake news back in 2015, 2016? Well, look, I know that's been around for quite some time, but do you know that lawsuits have been filed against, they're peddling fake news. Fake news. It's all fake news. How quickly that phrase went on. Okay. Just kind of keep that in the back of your mind. And believe me, I'm much poorer because of having to defend against things like that, right? Okay. Now, founded in mid-2015 under the auspices of the UK government-funded NGO Institute for Statecraft, this Integrity Initiative boasted a fashionable motto, again, defending democracy against disinformation. Yes, I felt that was in need of repeating. And you can, if you scroll down there a little bit, I think you can see the logo. There it is right there. That's their logo. Now, again, this is defunct, but it worked well. What they did was they recruited secretive clusters of the people in academia, any influencers, including and especially journalists and lobbyists. And now Revolver states that this took place in multiple European countries. I will contend, based on my research, I will assert that it's my professional investigative opinion, this was taking place inside the United States as well, even more aggressively. And this article does go on to talk about its organization, funding, operation, structure, and rhetoric. But they say that that's the single best template for understanding how the entire hornet's nest of NGOs, journalists, national security bureaucrats work secretly and in concert with one another to wage psychological warfare against citizens of the West. One cannot understand how the disinformation industry functions without understanding this little known and now defunct Integrity Initiative. I'm telling you, this is a set of keys, if you will. Now, I'm going to skip a part here and then come back to this. Folks, if you go to page 3, this was published in the Charlotte Observer yesterday. Folks, look at this headline. Unsettling Fort Bragg recruitment video ignites debate over its mysterious intent. Now, this is carried on MSM website as well as the Charlotte Observer. And if you scroll down, you can see exactly what this is all about. Let me get there myself, because this is important for people to really understand. Okay, if you really want to see how bad things are and how we are being played for morons, fools, idiots, and how we're being played, and how others are parroting this disinformation. Yeah, don't play that yet. I've got that under a separate video. There was a video, and this is what's being referenced in this article. There was a video that was sent to me. Again, I want to thank James. Thank you so much. This was sent to me. And the article talks about this video. And it starts off with, now, again, this is written from an MSM legacy media point of view. It's a stretch to think the U.S. Army, to link the U.S. Army to witchery. But that's what's happening in response to an eerie recruitment video shared on YouTube by Fort Bragg's 4th Psychological Operations Group Airborne. Okay. Again, we have to put a stop there. Let's trace back to where this is going. Anyway, I did, and that's forthcoming, but the article does state, Ghost in the Machine, that's the title of the video on YouTube. It feels like a movie trailer and comes with no explanation other than all the world's a stage. Join us. Now think about that. All the world is a stage. Join us. Remember yesterday, I talked about the Ford plant in Kansas City. When Biden went to that Ford plant in promotion of electric vehicles, what did he do? He said, everyone's in favor. We need to switch from gas-operated and diesel-operated vehicles to electric vehicles. Here's the problem with his appearance at that Ford plant that no one's covered. No one has said a word about this. Remember, all the world's a stage, right? Guess what? At that Ford plant, the manager, if you will, of that Ford plant told all of the floor workers there, the assemblers, the workers, to stay home. Well, that can't be, because there were a lot of workers there in that photo op and that video op. Guess what? They bust those in. Those were actors. Think about that. Let that sink in. And you may say, well, you know, that there's no excuse for that in a free and open country. Okay, back to this video that the Charlotte Observer says, wow, this is really weird. I can't believe this. Ghost in the Machine. Well, I have an explanation. Yeah, by the way, this was posted here. When was it? It was earlier this, or in April, I believe it was. Or, I'm sorry, it was posted May 2nd. And then right now it's got over 340,000 views. And the question, the issue is the intent. What's the intent here? Now, a growing number of articles debate the intent of this video, including the occult history of the U.S. military psyops, highly symbolic recruitment video. But this is the property of production of and ownership by the 4th Psychological Operations Group, also known as PSYOP, identifies or defines itself as the masters of influence and practitioners of information warfare. But here's the issue. Now, this, of course, the U.S. Army, it's supposed to be for outside of the United States use, right? Look, folks, the Army, all of the intelligence community assets, as well as the U.S. military, are not only pointed outward, but they're especially pointed inward, as we, the Christian conservatives, are being made to be the enemies of the state This is now becoming a military operation as well as an intelligence community operation. What I'm telling you is this. This is being used upon us here in the United States, all throughout the West, as well as against our enemy countries. Everything that you see, you have to question. All of the world is a stage. Their words, not mine. Okay, let's go to that video. And again, I'm going to come back to Nina, Scary Poppins, but hold on, because let's take a look at this video. The Charlotte Observer, and James sent me, what they're talking about here. What's this video? And folks, watch this video and tell me that this is normal. I dare you to tell me that this is normal. This is an army, again, to set this up, this is an army recruitment video for the psychological operations. I've got the actual website here. And by the way, it's interesting that at the end of this video, you're going to see the Latin phrase verbum vincens, which means the word will conquer. Very interesting phrase, isn't it? The word will conquer. Look, again, I go back to all the world's a stage, but who is writing the script? Well, let's take a look at this video now. This is video number three, Ghost in the Machine. Here it is. For the radio listeners, this is just a quote from Sun Tzu. Just so you know, if your opponent is of choleric temper, seek to irritate him. Pretend to be weak, that he may grow arrogant. Here's a cartoon, of course, again, for radio listeners.
As the world watches and listens in horror, the peaceful pro-democracy demonstration in China comes to a violent and bloody end.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Wolves hiding nearby, whispering.
Born from the ashes. It's across the screen along with a of a world at war, by the way. You'll find us in the shadows. And then there's this image of military underground at the tip of the spear. And there's communist
you
China.
Say your last
threat rises in the night. East. Times Square. Warfare is evolving. And all the world to the stage.
There is another very important phase of warfare. It has as its target not the body, but the mind of the enemy.
The target of psychological warfare is against the enemy's mind.
It is words and ideas.
The ammunition used by Cywar.
Its mission is to influence the thoughts of the enemy soldiers.
And at the same time, we can
it's expected and encouraged to study foreign languages and the social sciences such as history, economics, and sociology. He must have a broad and sympathetic understanding of all phases of human experience.
Gripping at my skin, the walls of night closing.
They come in many forms.
But the use of this force as an integral part of combat has now taken on new form.
We are everywhere. are we? Psy War. Now, okay, and that concludes.
These are the Psy War soldiers.
That concludes the video. Again, verbum vincet, the word will conquer in Latin. Okay, where is that, or where does that come from? This comes from, go to page 5, if you don't mind. We'll just put this up briefly, and we're going to get back to Nina here. Page 5, U.S. Army Psychological Operations. This is the group behind that video. All right, now, look, I understand the need for special ops, including psychological operations against enemy combatants or enemies of our nation, but it should be limited, obviously, and it should be very used carefully. But folks, go through this website, and you'll see how this is being pushed. And this is nothing new, necessarily, but this is newly refined, using AI as one of the means, as one of the tools in the arsenal. Now, you'll have to admit, I would suspect that the video itself was certainly a little bit creepy, but that's their promo video. And of course, they've got the benefits of being in special operations. This is a recruitment page and such. So that is U.S. Army Special or U.S. Army Psychological Operations, which is a subgroup, or under the page 4 is U.S. Special Ops Command. Well, who's commanding this? And you take a look at that, and you can identify the people behind this. And you can just briefly show this. The 4th Psychological Operations Group, Airborne. This is from Fort Bragg, by the way. And the commanders are identified, and the detachment, of course, and the various stuff that they do. All right, it's all there. Okay, quickly, going back to the Revolver article. What does that have to do with anything? Well, it shows you how deep that this governance information, or disinformation governance board, will impact everybody in the West, and especially American citizens like you and I, because I don't even have enough time to go through this. The Integrity Initiative, although defunct, remains alive through other NGOs and subgroups. Remember, this initiative was NATO's political committee, or a political committee of NATO. Please read the article at Revolver. Nina Jankowicz's name, she appears in a 2018 leak as a member of the inner core of that group, of that UK cluster, specifically in a subgroup dedicated to Russia. Now let's quickly move on to video number. Hang on a minute here. That's the only one left, isn't it? All right, we'll go to video 2, because let me set this up. Guess who was with or a part of that initiative? The Atlantic's own Ann Applebaum. As stated in Revolver, another name appears alongside Nina Jankowicz's in the leaked document as a member of the inner core of the UK cluster dealing with Russia. It's Ann Applebaum. Revolver briefly touched upon Applebaum's apparent involvement in the Integrity Initiative in an earlier piece, which is linked within that article. But here is how this whole disinformation, this disinformation governance board is working against the interests of the American people. Because remember, back in 2020, the Hunter Biden laptop, and go back to 2016 with Russia, Trump ties to Russia. Okay, you might not like Donald Trump. I don't care. The fact of the matter is, you should have information that is real and available to you, not 51 members or 50 members of our intelligence community signing onto a document, lying their asses off, because that's exactly what they did for the purposes of disinformation. And then you have this Muppet, Anne Applebaum from the Atlantic Council, answering this question at a conference, which was disinformation and the erosion of democracy. Notice the words are the same, but here is Anne Applebaum, part of this initiative, along with Nina Jankowicz, telling you what you should read and what you shouldn't read and what you should pay attention to and what's unimportant. Watch this.
Let's take a...
Amazing. Thank you. Thank you for doing this. Really appreciate it. I'm Daniel Schmidt. I'm a freshman at the University of Chicago. My question is for Ms. Applebaum. So in 2020, you wrote, those who live outside the Fox News bubble do not, of course, need to learn any of the stuff about Hunter Biden, referring to his laptop, of course. A poll later after that found that if voters knew about the content of the laptop, 16% of Joe Biden voters would have acted differently. Now, of course, we know a few weeks ago, the New York Times confirmed that the content is real. Do you think the media acted inappropriately when they instantly dismissed Hunter Biden's laptop as Russian disinformation? And what can we learn from that in ensuring that what we label as disinformation is truly disinformation and not reality?
My problem with Hunter Biden's laptop is I think it's totally irrelevant. I mean, it's not whether it's disinformation or, I mean, I don't think the Hunter Biden's business relationships have anything to do with who should be president of the United States. So I don't find it to be interesting. I mean, that would be my problem with that as a major news story.
We're going to talk about more of this.
All right. Tomorrow. Believe it or not, that's how they handled the Hunter Biden laptop. And by the way, if you go to, if you search this out, all of the emails from Hunter Biden's laptop, 130-some thousand of them are posted on a specific website. Again, the link will be in the program description box at HagmanReport.com. Now, why did I bring this up? It is because, okay, let's go to page two very quickly. I know we're running out of time. The article, Revolver article that I showed you goes on, mentions, of course, Anne Applebaum. But there's a backstory here as well. This is page two from Revolver. This is a Revolver article that goes back. This was published in March of 2021. Dark new Dem bill uses counter-American intelligence to wage war on MAGA. Now, the reason I bring this up and tie everything together, do you remember Biden, Joey Six Plugs, or Joey Two Scoops, whatever. Remember him saying the phrase, the MAGA king, ultra MAGA, using that phrase, ultra MAGA, as a pejorative against people who want to put America first, attempting to keep it associated with President Donald Trump. They are making those people who are nationalists identify with America first. Hey, we got to take care of ourselves first. If you think that way, then you are an anti-globalist. If you are an anti-globalist, then you are an enemy of the nation, an enemy of the state, and we are allowed to use psychological operations on you. And even if we're not allowed to, we still will, and they are. And they're trying to codify the use of psychological operations through HB 353, I think it is. Where is it? Which is still in committee, by the way. And if you, again, I'm going to go through this very quickly. If you scroll down on this, what they're trying to do is to ban anyone who has ever believed in conspiracy theories from holding a security clearance. And they get to define what conspiracy theories are. They get to define what things like, the deep state is a conspiracy theory. If you scroll down even further, you're going to see a page with a highlighted document. Keep going down. For those people watching, there it is right there. Okay, this is a bill that was introduced, again, to bar anyone who ever believed in what they think are conspiracy theories. What Nina Jankowicz said, hey, deep state doesn't exist. What Annie Applebaum about the Hunter Biden computer, no, we're not talking about that. You can't talk about this. And this is what they are trying to do. They're trying to make this into law. And what this says in this bill, which again has never made it out of committee, despite its being introduced, what this says, and really the heart of this, The following question has been included in Standard Form 86, modifying Section 29 with respect to associations. And this, again, goes to security clearances. Standard Form 86, if you know what we're talking about, SF-86. In order to get a security clearance, you have to answer certain questions. This is one of the questions now that will be introduced. And that is this. Have you ever been a member of, associated with, or knowingly engaged in activities conducted by organizations by an organization or movement that spreads conspiracy theories and false information about the United States government? So what they're trying to do is prohibit anyone who said, hey, there's a deep state. Hey, this isn't what it should be. Hey, do you know that they brought actors into the Ford plant in Kansas City as a backdrop for Biden just so he wouldn't get any flack about the electric vehicles? Because, you know, we have to go green, right? They tried to codify this. Again, it's stuck in committee. But the fact of the matter is, this is extremely dangerous. And guess who is behind this initiative, as well as the current initiative coming from the Mr. Potato Head? Okay, who's advising this guy in this particular case? Who is the mental giant behind this? Who's the chief strategist? Because remember that phrase, ultra MAGA, the pejorative phrase, identifying us as enemies of the state? Well, come to find out, that was a six-month study done, kind of a research study with various focus groups. But it's Anita Dunn. If you go to page six, and we'll close out this segment by going to page six. Anita Dunn, this was reported by Conservative Treehouse last month. Well, Anita Dunn, spouse Bob Bauer. Of course, you know Anita Dunn. Anita Dunn's got a rich history of being involved in Barack Hussein Obama. And she's an avowed socialist. Biden's effort to turn ultra-MAGA into a disparaging epithet came from a six-month study headed by Anita Dunn. Please read this article, but understand who you're dealing with here. This is Barack Hussein Obama. This is Hillary Clinton. This is the deep state, the face of the deep state, the working operative of the deep state, Anita Dunn and company. So here's the takeaway from all of this. You speak about nationalism. You speak about America first. You say, hey, you know what? The baby formula down at the southern border. Oh, that's a lie. It's not there. Well, that should be for our babies, American babies, not for illegals coming across the border. Well, then you are enemy of the state because you don't believe in globalism. You don't believe in helping your man. You see how this is all perverted and perverse? Hey, whatever happened to give me your tired, your poor, your... You know, whatever happened to that, you're not much of an American. You're an enemy. And that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to paint all of us who want America first and who want our constitutional values in our country, who want to identify the enemies within. We are now the enemy, and those guns will be turned inward. It's just a matter of time. And how are they going to do this? Through additional lockdowns and, of course, through military action, paramilitary action, and intelligence action, as well as shutting off our gateways, payment gateways, funding, banks. You won't be able to shop. You won't be able to do diddly squat. This is what they're doing. They're prepping the other side. They're prepping these mindless, mind-numbed robots to take away our freedoms, the people who believe in this country, in the Constitution, and the rule of law, the people who are calling out the others who are members of the deep state, the fact that oh, Lisa Page, her husband, her lawyer, Lisa Page is the husband or wife of the judge in the Sussman case. There's incestuous relationships everywhere, but you can't talk about that. We are the enemies. And remember, all of the world is a stage. Motive? Globalism. Wipe everything out. Ashes, dust, and then rebuild it in their image, small g gods. Means? Disinformation Governance Board. The politicians already in Congress. The people in the White House. The building as well as the structure of the executive branch. The courts, the Soros-laden courts, taking away our ability to vote properly. They have the opportunity right now. Motive means opportunity. Absolutely. They're doing it right now. How's this going to end? Not well. All of the links will be in the program description box at HagmanReport.com. Please look through, follow. Again, kudos to Revolver and the people there. All right. Eric the Tech, did you follow me on that? He's shaking his head, yeah, so that's okay. I'm telling you, it's going to get worse before it gets better. All right. Stan Dale from StanDale.com. Made him wait, and I didn't mean to, and I'm sorry about that. Stan, how are you, sir? Well, yeah, a little slow on the uptake there, aren't you? Sorry. What's that? Yeah, he just said he's going to beat me after the show. All right, folks. Stan Dale from StanDale.com. That's StanDale.com. You know what? He had a great Patreon meeting here. I got to tell you, yeah, support Stan. And also, you know what you need? If you haven't done so already, make sure you have an EMP shield because the sun's acting funny. You got enemies that can attack our grid. Protect your own equipment. Go to EMPShield.com. Use promo code Hagman for $50 off. You need this. I'm telling you, for your home, for your generator, for your boat, for your car, for your mother-in-law, I don't care. Get one of these or five. EMPShield.com, promo code Hagman, Stan Dale from StanDale.com. A brilliant man and somebody I'm very, very proud to be able to call a friend and an associate. And that's Stan Dale. Stan, how are you, sir?
I'm well, thank you.
Sorry for taking your time. I'm going to shut up.
That's all right. That's all right. I just tuned into the last part of your previous segment. You were mentioning Form 86 or something, was it?
Standard Form 86, which is, for security clearances.
You know, that's an interesting thing because we have the colloquial term to 86 or ghost somebody. Interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's just exactly what that SF 86 question one would do. And that would ghost or 86 anyone who believes in America First.
And I don't know whether you were covering this about the control of the United States and by passing or sidestepping the U.S. Constitution. Was it to do with the Biden handover to who?
Well, we covered that. Yeah, I've covered that before, but yeah, in fact, I wrote an article for Wisconsin Christian News about the who will mandate lockdowns and the World Health Assembly over the World Health Organization. And May 22nd through 28th, just so people know, they're going to be meeting and subjugating our constitutional autonomy to a World Health Organization, not for pandemic response, but for entire lockdown procedures, much like China. Go ahead, sir.
I wondered if you'd covered that because it just opened the door to blue helmets in the country, troops on the ground from, you know, the UN. It's just draconian measures. It's going to turn us into little China, the communist USA. I just can't believe that such a simple piece of legislation can have that much power, but it is going to put the cat amongst pigeons here. I mean, we I don't know how we can be having elections and stuff with this hanging over our head. It's just a terrible thing. Terrible thing. Anyway, I probably agree with everything you've written about it. So,
well, it's just facts. And you know, Stan, just briefly, this does not have to be ratified because in 1969, the World Health Assembly created this legally binding instrument known as the IHR. The IHR is the only international legal treaty with the responsibility of empowering the World Health Organization to act as the main global surveillance system over member nations, and that's why it does not be ratified. That's why they made amendments. Lois Pace is the person, the ambassador to the WHO, who delivered or is delivering the amendments, and because they're amendments as opposed to a new treaty, they don't have to be ratified. And that's the deal. So, and this is scheduled once this is approved, this is going to go into effect in 2024, I believe it is. Go ahead, sir.
Oh, well, that's a good delay. Anyway, give us time to get things organized to resist.
Cite the rifles. That's right.
You betcha. You betcha. During the last week, I started checking my diesel supplies that I've had stored for 20 years. Even though I have things to replenish the diesel, a lot of them had started growing black mold and stuff in them. And so I had to replace all of our diesel, which was not cheap. But in the process of doing that, I talked with the diesel depot in town and talked to him about, is there going to be a problem with diesel in the future here? Are we going to be running short of supply? He says, bet on it. He says, the truckers are all worried about it. It's going to come down. And so fortunately, I was able to get the diesel I need for replenishing our stuff. But a little bit of intelligence there to prove the point is the truckers and the diesel suppliers are all afraid of what's about to happen in the next couple of months. It's upon us. And it's slide 55 up there. I talk about shortages of diesel fuel and electricity. And there's a link to a site that talks about it. But it says, without diesel, our trains and trucks don't run, right? And they don't run America's supply chains completely and utterly. The supply chains utterly collapse. So even a moderate shortage would be absolutely paralyzing for the U.S. economy. Major trucking fleets across the eastern half of the U.S. are already receiving text alerts telling them to keep their tanks full as they prepare for an imminent diesel shortage, according to logistics firm FreightWaves. And as I say, I talked to the guys here at the Diesel Depot about this. excuse me, I've got a frog in the throat. I don't know what I've had, some allergy or something here, but I'm trying to get rid of that with some lemon and honey here. excuse me. Anyway, okay. That diesel is our secondary backup to two diesel generators. We've got to back up the solar power. Now, you're talking about EMP just briefly at the beginning of the show tonight. You know, it not only protects your devices in the house from getting zapped, the circuits getting killed, smart refrigerators, smart freezers, computers, et cetera, but a thing that people don't think about is when an EMP strike occurs, if you do not have any EMP shield, it is definitely going to start fires in the wiring of your house. You're talking about 60,000 volts surging through everything in your house that's got a wire on it. It's only a nuclear thing. It's only about a millionth of a second worth, but it definitely could start fires in your house and walls, etc., from this, the arc overs. If it's a solar EMP, which lasts for hours, it will most definitely burn your house down if you don't have some way to direct that high voltage current that hits your house, away from your wiring, down into the ground. And that's an EMP shield. It's something people don't really consider when they're thinking about, oh, do I get an EMP shield, or do I care whether I've got, you know, radio working or your fridge, etc. This is to protect your house from catching fire. Now, I've got solar in here, and I can go out there. There's a disconnect switch to disconnect me from the mains immediately. If it's a nuclear EMP, I won't have time to get out and do it, but I've already tested it when we're having all these power failures now here in Pueblo. So I go out where the power starts to go glitchy, and I disconnect from the mains, and I'm on solar power, and everything's right. So the EMP from the sun would be going down into the ground, and if I disconnect the mains, then, you know, that the high voltage from the grid is not going to be interfering with my power supply, because I've got three EMP shields on my power supply. Anyway, that's...
Thanks for explaining that again, because I'll tell you something, okay? It would really suck if your house burned down. By the way, I had a family member, close family member, whose house burned down. I got to tell you, and it's a major inconvenience when that happens, just about 7-8 years ago. But you're right. It's more than just protecting equipment. It's protecting your entire home where you live. And think about that, folks. And some people will say, well, that's just fear porn. Okay. You know what? Good. Carry on. See you later. Have a nice day. Mm. Okay.
Hope you make it.
Yeah.
This week has also been, last week and part of this week has been tree planting for us, and also repairing the water pump that we have in the workshop, because the fuel had clogged the carburetor and stuff. So we had to replace the carburetor and get some of this fuel that doesn't have ethanol for it. We have probably 200 feet or more of standard fire hose, and this thing can shoot a stream 275 feet of water straight out. So we got that ready. We got 7,500 gallons of water ready. And fortunately, we have a fire plug in the front of the house, you know, standard fire plug, which we, I think that's the term, but anyways, what the fire department uses to hook their
hoses. The hydrants, but do you have the wrenches?
Yeah, do.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
All right.
yeah, our neighbors and I got together on this and figured out how we're going to get to that and save our houses. So I can probably protect, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 houses with what I've got here. So it's a kind of a community effort to be sure that we don't burn our houses down from fire that gets loose. And right now, I mean, I can go out and look out to northeast of here toward Pikes Peak, and there are little spot fires happening out there in the paddocks over near the military base, you know, near Fort Carson. And you see the smoke coming up, and you get little fire warnings. And so if we get a series of hot winds, like we've been having at gusts of up to 55 miles an hour, and fires, most of them will fortunately go, you know, toward Colorado Springs instead of where we are. But we're still being prepared to help ourselves and our neighbors.
Wow, that's pretty good.
Reminder.
Just from experience, memories from my time in the fire department and EMS rescue, never straddle a fire hose. Okay, I've seen bad things happen when that happens. Never straddle a fire hose, especially when it's about to get charged. Go ahead.
Is that like raising you up in the air or what?
Oh, it. Let me tell you, the trees and berries get smushed. I saw that happen to a guy. He was in the hospital for, I think, at the time, back, this is 77, like 2 weeks after, yeah, they charged the fire line. It just went poof, and he went, he was crying for a week. I mean, crying.
Ouch.
Yeah.
You know, this EMP business, slide 56 on our show images page, there's a warning here about Iran and its development of EMP-type missiles. I don't know whether they can do it without a nuclear device, but it says here, a former CIA double agent who spent time in the Iranian army confirmed that the Iranians have conducted missile tests of ships in the Caspian Sea that are considered, are consistent with an EMP attack. So how did they attack them with an EMP attack unless they've got the means to do that? A nuke or, you know, some kind of an explosion that generates EMP at close range. They are going to get the Gulf of Mexico with ballistic missiles, and they can launch one at a moment's notice, and they wouldn't care about the repercussions. So I hearken back to what Holly and I were told when we were down with the Hopi Indians, the prophecy keeper, and he said that we would be invaded by three nations, China, Russia, and one Middle Eastern nation. And, you know, I never thought about Iran being able to reach us, but hey, they are. They can get ships into the Gulf, they can get them offshore, and they can hit us with EMPs, which may be more local than a nationwide one. But if they do have a nuke perfected, which they're working on at the moment, they may use it. And they may be the ones that hit us with an EMP nationwide. So pay attention to what's happening with Iran. In that respect.
All right.
You know, Israel is in a peculiar position, an unfortunate one, in that there are 34 nations around it, maybe 40, which are Arab nations and mostly Muslim of some description or other. And they want to destroy Israel, you know, or the Israelis there, the Zionists, and get them out and have Jerusalem as the capital of the Arab Muslim world. Now, Iran has, you know, the Khomeini over there has made no bones about it. He wants to destroy the Zionists in Jerusalem and the United States, which is the big Satan that is controlling Israel. So Israel has every right at this point, since Iran, its close neighbor there, is almost a nuclear power and is threatening to take Israel out, you know, just go ahead and attack them, you know, without cause. Israel has the right, in my opinion, to go in and blow up any of the centrifuge sites to make you know, fissible material, any of the missile sites there and in Syria. They've been doing it near Damascus and northeast of Damascus as well in the mountains. So when you read slide 57, IDF, Israeli Defense Force, utterly destroyed an Iranian site in Syria. According to foreign reports, this was the third aerial attack in the last 3 weeks to stop Iranian entrenchment in the country of Syria. Excuse me. Israeli intelligence firm ImageSat International released before and after pictures in which several buildings in a row of the northwestern region of Masaya were utterly demolished. And you can click on the picture there in slide 57 and see the before and after pictures after Israel hit it. Now, in keeping with that, I've got a story here I just put in. Yeah. slide 46. Biden to visit Jerusalem with unprecedented statement, Zion belongs to Muslims. He has demanded that he will not be accompanied by any official Israeli, but will meet with members of the Palestinian Authority who have been permitted to administer certain hospitals and schools in East Jerusalem, but who insist that their capital will be in Israel's undivided and sovereign capital, Jerusalem, even though their government and administrative offices are in Ramallah. So here's our president saying, you know, hey, let's get rid of the Zionists. I'm not in favor, you know, of, you know, Israel occupying their own nation, their own capital. And you see that the Israelis are striking Iran to try to keep them from bombing them. So Israel's getting it from all sides. America, big Satan, should be helping them to defend herself against, you know, the Muslim attacks. But Biden's doing everything he can, and it's the guys behind him, to destroy, you know, Israel's occupation, you know, of her own land, of their own capital. I've seen it in German press as well about where Jews are not being allowed on certain buses and trains, and they're starting this whole thing of World War II all over again. I never thought we would see it, but it's happening. You know,
you make a good point. A lot of people ask, you know, how could that happen? How could what we saw happen during World War II happen today? You're seeing it happen. You make a great point. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, in keeping with this line of thought, the Iranians have announced that they are installing 1,000 new kinds of centrifuges, the IR-6, including a new underground facility being built near Natanz. The defense minister of Israel, Benny Gantz, announced on Tuesday Iran is completing production and installation of 1,000 advanced centrifuges. According to the defense minister, Tehran is a few weeks away from accumulating enough fissile material sufficient for one nuclear bomb. And, well, let's face it, one nuclear bomb in the middle of Israel is going to do significant damage. So we can expect an Israeli strike on that Natanz facility within days. Now, coupled with that, slide 48, talking about persecution against the Jews, against Israel, for the first time, Russia opens fire at Israeli aircraft on a Syrian battlefield. Syria, where Iran is doing its testing of missiles, you know, near Damascus and northeast of Damascus. So the Russians are now shooting at our allies, they should be our allies, Israel. An S-300 Russian-made surface-to-air missile battery fired on Israeli Air Force jets during a reported Israeli strike about 4 days ago, May the 13th. The report claimed that the S-300 battery is operated by the Russians and that it constituted the first time that Russian forces fired on the Israeli Air Force. You know, the persecution is right out there in front of us. The Russians, the Iranians, most of the Arab world want Israel to die, to get away from, you know, what the Arab forces want as their capital or their second most holy worship place or something. It is just unbelievable to see all this happening so quickly, all at once.
All at once, yeah.
Slide 53, is an interesting report on what's happening in Iran itself, with its population and their relationship to the Khomeini there. Death to the dictator. Iran hunger protests get violent, deaths reported. The unrest follows Iran's announcement earlier in the week that the cost of cooking oil, chicken, eggs, and milk would rise by as much as 300% as food prices surge across the Middle East due to global supply chain snarls and Russia's invasion of a major food exporter, Ukraine. So in other words, Ukraine gets hit, and the Middle East supply elsewhere is failing to be able to supply the needs of Iran, you know, to feed its citizens. So there's an uprising afoot in Iran against, you know, the Khomeini and his government because, hey, they don't care about the politics. They want food on the table, and they can't afford it when it costs three times as much as it did, you know, last week. I can't imagine what would happen here in this country. Well, maybe we'll find out if food prices on the basic commodities jumps by that much. There would be riots in the street and armed riots.
Yes.
So you know, golly, Moses, can you believe this stuff?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're seeing it play out. You know, you've been warning about this. You've written about it. Holly's been warning. I mean, everyone's been warning about this, and here we are. And people are like, well, they're surprised. Diesel, you mentioned it earlier, diesel. I mean, my goodness, so expensive but unavailable, especially on the East Coast. By the way, you should talk to people on the East Coast. They're saying, we're not going to get any more diesel. I mean, we're going to be short on diesel. And if the trucks don't run with the diesel, no one's getting anything. So shortages, absolutely. And we're seeing it play out right now.
I know. It's just, I think, you know, as Christians and students of prophecy, we've been talking about this for years, generations even, but more so in the last generation. And to see it at this point in the beginning of the tribulation period, all happening so rapidly, it has to surprise most of us that have been students of this, thinking, wow, I knew it was coming, but not, you know, when you say the birth pangs of the woman get closer and closer toward the birth of the tribulation period, this is like in seconds rather than hours, you know, or days. I'm just, every day I open up the news, I think, wow, here's another thing that I can't believe is happening at the same time right now. It's there. Anyway, along the line of the food crisis, now we're not alone in addressing the food crisis in this country and the fuel and all that kind of stuff. The U.S. Europe is doing it. Europe is racing to improve food supply chains after India bans wheat exports. Okay, we lost Ukraine's stuff because of the Russian invasion, and India is now saying we're keeping our wheat for ourselves. And these are big producers, you know, that even, you know, Europe depends on. Ukraine not only has grains to export, but fertilizers and vegetable oil, and they won't be able to supply any of that to Europe as long as they're fighting the Russians. Now, India, this is the case in India. It says here, for example, this is slide 52, which announced Saturday a ban on wheat sales to manage the overall food security of the country. So we're all going to be turning inward, if we're not already, to our own countries, to nationalism, to supply our people with adequate food, you know, and supplies that are necessary for daily life. So watching Biden and the people behind him doing what you're doing, it's, as I've said many times, and you have too, they're forcing us into a position where if we don't have an armed revolution and get rid of those people that have occupied the White House, we will be overtaken and imprisoned because we're, what were you saying in the first segment about we're disposable people or we're deplorables or MAGA crazy?
Pretty much. They turned the phrase ultra MAGA. Well,
that's right.
The spontaneous utterance, allegedly, according to little Chucky, the Chucky doll up there behind the retired Chucky doll now, Saki, saying that ultra MAGA was a spontaneous utterance of Joey Six or Joey Two Scoops Biden. It turns out that whole campaign was done by Anita Dunn sponsored focus group thing study, 6 month study. And they're using it as pejoratives to paint us who care about America first as the enemies of the state. And they'll imprison us because of that. And that was the whole game, or the whole takeaway from the first segment. Go ahead.
You know, earlier today, did you watch the Senate or the congressional hearings on the UFO business and disclosure and all that?
I did not. I was otherwise preoccupied, but how'd it go?
Well, I didn't watch all of it, but I did watch the first part of it. And one of the, I think it was the Deputy Secretary of Defense or something like that, admitted to going to UFO conferences and possibly in costume at some time or another. And I'm thinking, this is the Deputy Secretary of Defense admitting to being a UFO, you know, follower nut or whatever. And there was laughter, of course, around when that happened. But what do I say? I mean, anyway, that UFO business, it's the thin end of the wedge when a sitting, you know, official in Deputy Secretary of Defense comes out and starts talking about this, that he's even, you know, well, he's not a conspiracy theorist, but he did go to UFO conferences and things like that. And I think it was, there was another guy there from Kentucky, I think. Rick Crawford, I think. He's a congressman from, I think, Kentucky. Anyway, I wrote him a letter or an email after I saw that this morning. And of course, I haven't heard back from him, but I did explain to him that what they were missing was the reason for all this cover up. And then I explained my involvement with the Teller Project and things like that, and showed him some diagrams and photos and stuff that would help him to understand, because they were all kind of fumbling around about whether they're aliens or not. And heck, we've known about it for over 50 years and dealt with them. So why has it been kept secret? They haven't really addressed that question. Not really. They don't know the answer. But anyhow.
For as long as you've been talking about it, folks, and now it's kind of becoming it to the forefront, I just find it interesting, the response. And by the way, I just think, I really believe that the great deception is going to revolve around that very subject. So, as you've talked about.
Yeah, I'm still convinced of that. Yeah. One of the things that they cited in this morning's hearings was something called the Malmstrom Minuteman event at Malmstrom Air Force Base, which the Minuteman missiles were installed in, I think, early 60s, as a defense mechanism against Russia, instant Minuteman launches to take these nuclear missiles over and bomb the heck out of strategic targets in Russia. And my uncles, Jack and George, they're now deceased, but they were electricians who wired a number of these missile silos for the Minuteman missiles. And they explained a few things about the three-step process to get into it and how they could activate various deterrents, lethal deterrents, as you try to get into these launch silos if you're not supposed to, flooding and electrical and various other things like that would kill you. I have a picture of the silo from inside of it there, slide 51. But this was an event that they were harping on because it deactivated our nuclear missile when this UFO came over. So you can click on the text of it and go to the article and read the discussion about what happened, and you know, after the fact even. One of the guards outside of that particular silo that got deactivated has left the service, years ago, and, didn't want to work on that stuff anymore because he was so frightened by what he saw and what happened downstairs, in the silo. Yeah. Mm. Anyway.
Definitely UFOs, read that, folks. Yeah.
There it is. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. It's a long article. So, yeah. Got a few things to cover today. A minor thing in San Diego. They've got so many drones over the city from various, law enforcement agencies and other places. They are virtually covering the city in drones at any one point in time and even at night. And it's the first city in the United States to become completely covered by drones. It's covering 275,000 people. And one of them said, pretty much the minute you walk outside your front door and move about your daily life, you're going to be tagged and tracked by some law enforcement agency, even though you've likely never been suspected for any wrongdoing. Boy, what an invasion of privacy. If Jesus was in charge of all this and he said that, I'd say, okay, because I trust him. But I do not trust humans in charge of our planet and our cities and our states and nations. We are fallible beings. So fallible. Anyway,
any consolidation of power outside of Jesus Christ would be a fool's errand. And you're right. I think that what they're trying to do is create what's being done. They've created choke points for supplies, choke points for energy, gas, diesel, choke points for power. And now they're consolidating in the form of a centralizing force the entire planet.
It's like we used to say in the hippie days here, we got to get out of this place, man. We got to get out of this place. Yeah.
Amen to that.
Far, far out, man. Far out. Anyway, a little thing on propulsion, just a note I was going to show on slide 42. If you click on the picture, the article is talking about Boeing's imminent launch of their civilian transport into space type missile capsule. And if you look at the picture as you're doing now, you'll see that the missile at the top of it looks a bit weird because it's not streamlined. It's got this capsule and a curtain around the bottom of a skirt sitting on top of that. And I looked underneath in the right side of that picture. I see it's kind of narrowed down under that, and then it goes back out to a full-size missile in the silver part. What the heck are they doing? Are they trying to create, you know, an entrainment drive using part of their weight to increase the lift on it? I mean, I've talked about it long enough that somebody must have paid attention to it. But to see this odd shape, which would generate curl around that throat of that white part of the missile, makes me wonder if they haven't developed, something to use part of their drag as a propellant, you know, as a reuse of the drag as an accelerator through the atmosphere. Anyway, just a minor thing. You read the article about the launch and, well, you know, when it's coming, things like that. But May 19th, just a couple of days, they should be doing it. Now, I want to get to the sun. The sun. How much time have I got?
You've got 20 minutes.
Okay. All right, let's go through slides 37 through 39. First of all, let's look at slide 37, which was taken earlier today. It's the heliograph of two-thirds of the sun's surface. And it shows two massive ultraviolet regions coming on the left side. And they'll be Earth-directed, start being Earth-directed in around, let's see, 6 to 7 days. If you click on the picture and look at it, you'll see these two bright spots coming on the left side. We are missing part of the picture because, as I say every week, one of the satellites stopped sending. But these white regions are regions to be concerned about because they are the birthplace of CMEs and super flares. And the dark space, if you look at the middle of that green shot, in about the middle, there's a dark area, which is a coronal hole, which emits high-speed particles, solar wind, at us. So we've got solar wind. We've just passing through that over the next day and a half, 2 days, we'll be getting that stream of extra solar wind, which makes magnetic storms on the Earth, interferes with communications, blah, blah, blah. And that is following that is bright areas on the left side of the zero point there, which are active now and could very well produce a CME or a flare that is hurtful to the Earth in many ways. But if that fails, 6 to 7 days later, those two bright spots over there are going to roll around and face us. This produces the total irradiance, you know, the ultraviolet. There are four main ultraviolet frequencies that they measure to see how much light of various frequencies is coming from the sun. And as I discussed last week, no matter how many sunspots you've got or whatever, the luminance, the total irradiance of the sun has been increasing over the last 200 years. There's no question about it. Not only has that happened, but the heat, like in the sea surface temperature anomalies, that has been increasing. Look at the picture in slide 39. Now, this shows the variation, the increase in temperature of the global sea surface temperatures, right? That's the blue line. The red line is sunspot numbers. And although, if you look at the blue line, there are little humps in there where there's a solar cycle. Right over the solar cycle will be a hump. But generally speaking, no matter how many sunspots you're having, the temperature of the sea is rising. Why? It's the light coming from the sun is changing, and more ultraviolet is getting through in several frequencies that I know about anyway. And we're seeing this increase in temperature, not due to human production and that kind of stuff. This is due to sunspot activity and something else, something with the sun not behaving. And if you look at slide 38, this is a current picture of the magnetic fields of the sun as of this morning. The northern hemisphere of the sun and the southern hemisphere are two different magnetic polarities. And these polarities shift every 11 and a half years with the sunspots. Like they flip upside down. When you look at the top part of this picture, the orange is one, it's the polarity, let's say it's north. And the blue-green is the south of these magnetic fields that produce these super flares. And you can see how the green part is way out ahead to the right there, as though it's a thin surface. This magnetic field is coming close to the surface, you know, And if you look down at the southern hemisphere, whoa, the green and the red are reversed. All of the sunspots down there in the magnetic fields that come in with it are reversed. The green comes first, and then the yellow-orange. That's the way it's supposed to be, although this was violated a couple of weeks ago when one spot down over on the lower right side had a reversal in the middle of that southern hemisphere magnetic field. The northern hemisphere type eruption occurred right in the middle of it and reversed the poles in the middle of that field, which is indicating an instability in the sun that is getting worse and worse. And we're going to see the sun do some very naughty things with throwing off mass, and it's coming. Now, I wanted to take a little time about giants and the Middle East and whether the giants survived the flood. There've been a number of learned rabbinical scholars over the centuries that have tried to figure out how the giants, you know, like Og and like what was the tribe, the Zamzamim, the Rephaim, Goliath and his brothers, how these giants reappeared on the other side of the flood, which was supposed to wipe out all life. And it did wipe out quite a bit of the planet, but there were little spots that did survive, believe it or not. And they said, well, the reason that Og was able to survive and breed more giants was that he hung on to the top of Noah's ark, and Noah fed him out the window of the ark so that he could hang there for a year. And then when the land came back and the flood receded, he could breed and make more giants. Well, this is nonsense. We know that's nonsense. But they can't understand how they reappeared. They didn't reappear. They didn't get all of them killed. And they were the product in Atlantis, which was all of Saudi Arabia and all the way out to the Levant. It was the Saudi Peninsula, as we called it in the research. These giants were the product of genetic manipulation by the fallen ones in that area. They were also in South America and in China and I think in Africa. But this manipulation occurred when the fallen ones started manipulating genes of human type persons or beings on the planet. Now, Genesis talks about, you know, God makes, you know, humans to multiply and be plentiful on the earth, et cetera, et cetera. And then after that general description, it starts about Adam and Eve. Now, the question is this, did the giants, did Atlantis and all that nonsense occur before the flood? And I think it did. Thus, did it occur before the Adamic man was made in the Garden of Eden? Well, it must have. So they were breeding all these things. They were on the earth, and God sent this flood after a while to destroy them because they started to pollute Adamic man who'd migrated down through the great East African Rift into Yemen and up into Saudi Arabia, which was Atlantis at that time. And that's why God took Noah, who had a clear bloodline, and his sons. I don't know about their wives, but his sons and his wife, obviously, they all had a clear, Adamic bloodline, and that's why they were saved from the great flood as the remnant of what should be the seed of man on the planet. And I looked at that, and then I said, well, okay, it says that Cain and Abel, okay, Cain rose up and killed his brother Abel. All right, who did Cain marry? And the common wisdom is, well, since they're the only people, it must have been his sister. But if the giants and their manipulated human structures, human beings of some description, if they were alive before the Garden of Eden, they could have been all over the place. And he could have married one of them. Now, if you click on slide 53 on the picture, that's out of my book, The Cosmic Conspiracy on the Eden Scrolls. Down toward the bottom, the Genesis account states Cain left the garden and took his wife to settle in the land of Nod on the east of Eden. Now, the land of Nod is India. It was India when it was joined right close by a river separating to Tanzania, where the Garden of Eden was. So Cain said to God, is my iniquity too great to be borne? Behold, you have banished me this day from the face of the earth. Can I be hidden from your presence? I must become a vagrant and a wanderer on earth. Whoever meets me will kill me. God said to him, therefore, whoever slays Cain before seven generations have passed will be punished, and God placed a mark upon Cain so that no one would kill him. So it was seven generations that he's protecting Cain. So now go to slide 44 and click on the next page. Cain left the presence of God and settled in the land of Nod, east of Eden. And Cain knew his wife, and she conceived and bore Enoch, and he became a city builder, and he named a city after his son Enoch. Now, here's an interesting point. The Hebrew word Indu, from whence the Indian words or names Indus, Hindu, and Sindhu are all derived, it means the men shall wander as fugitives, or the men shall be driven about. Now, when you look at the Hindi, they have this custom of putting the blood mark, the red bendy mark, right in their forehead. Why? They are the descendants of Cain and his wife. Anyway, the Hebrew root verb for the word Indu is derived from Nud, which may be pronounced either Nud or Nod in English. And, it, you know, even the ancient language in India, they named the Brahmaputra River. You know, it's a Hebrew, ancient Hebrew name. If you transliterate, it's Brahma Putra, the fear of the most powerful God. Anyway, Brahma Putra. Anyway, that's about the Garden of Eden and possibly having a pre-Adamic civilization. I know it's a very volatile discussion, but there are some mysteries back there that we don't understand yet. And this is my attempt to try to share with you some of the logic about the fact that there may have been another civilization made by the fallen ones before God made the perfect man and wife there in the Garden of Eden to infuse the planet. And when that was invaded by the fallen ones in Saudi Arabia, anywhere, Atlantis, he then sent the flood to wipe out as many of them as possible. And then when Israel, when the 12 tribes under Joshua went into Canaan and took over the land, one of the first tasks that God gave the house of Israel was go and kill all the giants. You know, the village got giants, kill all the beings, living things in it, because they've got corrupt genes or DNA. They're corrupted. That's why he finished the job by having Israel go kill them off. And then there were a series of 13 volcanoes and magma eruptions over where Og, the king of Bashan, lived, which was kind of northern Jordan. And it buried all of their dwellings that killed their civilization. And if you then look at slide 45, it's about the Greek settlements in that area. Now, we know that when Alexander the Great, you know, conquered most of the known world at that time, and when he died, that the Seleucids, like the Greeks, took over, you know, that area there. They built what's called the Decapolis cities, the 10 cities. But we have now found that there are nine more, about 19 cities that they built in that area. And they talk about their gods, their demigods, you know, like Hercules and all that kind of stuff, and as though they were living north of them in the Lebanon, Anti-Lebanon Mountains. Now, a lot of people read Plato's thing about the Critias and Demas debate about where Atlantis was and how it worked and all that kind of stuff. And people, you know, in good faith, you know, scholars have said, well, look, Plato's account says that the pillars of Hercules were where the sun rises to the west. So everybody thought, you know, Straits of Gibraltar, the great rocks there, that's the pillars of Hercules. But they have forgotten the fact that twice in recorded history, the sun has risen in the east for a while. Sorry, it's risen in the west for a while, not setting in the west. It rose in the west as east in the time that Critias and Timaeus debate was written by, or just before that by Plato. Why is this important? Because when you look at the map of the Middle East, and let me see if I can find it on that show image page, I'll just dial down to it for a second here. See if we can find that. Okay. Yeah, okay, that will be, if you go down to slide 10, is that right? No. Slide 20, go down to slide 20, click on that, and then go down to slide 10 within that. And I'm going to show you how this happened. Once you get that slide up there, Eric, if you go to slide 20 and then to slide 10 within that, there you go. Now you can zoom in on that in the picture of Santorini and stuff like that. If the sun rose in the west then, where the Straits of Gibraltar are, then west of Greece at that time would have been the Straits of Heracles or Hercules, where that arrow points to the tip where Saudi Arabia at that time did not join to Asia. And there are two great mountain ranges there. I have it in my lectures. Let's see if I even show. Yeah. Go down to slide 24 on that page. Slide 24. These are the Straits of Hercules on slide 24. But that was where the west was. That's where the sun set in those days. Twice, Egypt records it. China records it that the sun was rising in the west for a while, and it was during these times that the information given to Plato by the priests of Sais in Egypt recorded it when it was one of those inversion times where the surface of the earth was nearly upside down. This was the Straits of Hercules right here. And the water you see in this picture goes all the way back to form the original Atlantic Ocean and the water that led to Atlantis. Anyway, I've kind of gotten off topic there. But wow.
That's pretty good. I mean, that's very interesting. Okay.
Time remaining?
We've got about 4 minutes.
Okay. Giants. Now, I there's a file that you can load down. It says in slide 40. See my notes. Click here. It's just a little RTF file that you can read about some of the things I was looking at. The number of giants that have been reported in the Bible and extra-biblical documents over the years from ancient sources. If you click on the text in slide 40, it takes you to a site I found, which is absolutely astounding. It's a data storage site, and it's about the giants in the Middle East and the names of them and where they were and how they lived and who reported it. And if you look at that, scroll down that page, there's another page, you know, after that as well, part of the references as well. But, wow, I went through this, and there is no doubt in my mind that there were giants all over the place, you know, in the early days. And it talks about, in some of the discussions there, about how Joshua, you know, had to figure out how to beat the giants. I mean, if you look at the 40 years before Joshua entered Canaan, the spies that were sent in to what would become Israel said, oh, there are giants here. They're too big for us to, you know, to deal with. We're not going in. We're scared. And that's why God made that generation wander in the desert until they died. Joshua goes in as a military leader for Israel and starts killing all of these bad dudes that remain, these giants, because they were fierce. They were cannibals as well. They would eat human flesh. And so I thought it was important to see this documentation, and because it's not always what you have read and just what's in the Bible. There are other things. It's very important. And I took a picture or a snap of a site in Texas where a guy has a museum for things he's found in archaeology. And one of them was a picture of a human femur, a bone in the hip, that was for a guy that had that skeleton. He was 8 foot tall. So that's gigantic, especially since during the time of the Bible, a lot of the people were only about five and a half. You know, they weren't like 6 foot type beings on average. So he would have been twice their height. Anyway, that's the basis of all that stuff.
Very interesting intellectual work. And folks, go to standale.com and make sure you, if you haven't done so already, make sure you take advantage of all of his DVDs and such, his investigative work products, because they are amazing, as well as his Patreon. Join that as well to become even more informed. And folks, Dare to Prepare as well. Holly's books, Stan's books, A Cosmic Conspiracy, and again, all of the DVDs. We really appreciate your deep research into things. Quite interesting. I mean, this was, I'm going to have to watch this again today after the show, because you went over some really great points, some really interesting stuff, deep dive, good stuff.
Yeah. That's the way it goes around here. I just kind of try to get to the bottom of things, and I'm very curious.
I love it. Anyway. I love it. All right. Well, you've taken us to the end. Thank you, my friend. Appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
All right. The amazing, the irreplaceable Stan Dale from standale.com. I'm telling you, that the man is a genius, isn't he? The real Indiana Jones. Go to standale.com. Make sure you bookmark that website and take advantage of what he has to offer. Really. EMP Shields as well. My EMP Shield. EM, yeah. I'll get this right, empshield.com. Oh, and by the way, folks, I've been getting just a ton of email about Pure Body Extra. Go to HagmanReport.com, click on the link there. It's a spray in your mouth, $5. Next best subscription price would be $63 per month. I'm telling you what, it's amazing stuff. Again, HagmanReport.com for all things show-related. StanDale.com. Stan, thank you so much. God bless you. Good night, everyone.